Chapter 26. Feeling alarmingly as if his world were turning upside down, Robin went to deal with his secretary to insist on no more tattling. The man looked as if he were going to protest, but at least kept his mouth shut. "I will dismiss you," Robin warned. "I'm sure that's hard to believe of the lad you birched for not learning his Greek, but I am no longer that boy." Trevelyan frowned. "You are still not wise." Robin held on to his temper. "Then I will have to learn faster, won't I? But you are to obey my orders and keep my privacy, even from my mother. If you cannot, leave now, and I'll give you glowing recommendations. Fail me, and I'll throw you out. Reluctantly, but I will do it." For a horrible moment, Robin thought the man was going to cry. But then he said, "Perhaps you're readier than I thought. But yes, then, I'll take your first offer. I don't believe I'm best suited for the new role." Robin almost protested, but said, "Very well." He held out his hand, and after a hesitation, Trevelyan took it. "You've served me well, but it's hard for all of us to metamorphose into new roles. Where will you go?" They broke hands, and Trevelyan took out a handkerchief and dabbed at his eyes. "I believe I will return to tutoring, sir. It was very satisfying with a mind such as yours." "Mine?" Robin asked with a laugh. "You berated me every inch of the way. For laziness, for taking the easy way. And it galled me that you could excel at everything even so. Ah, is that the secret of it? Sweat and grit teeth, and the whole world will applaud the results, even if they be dismal. Doesn't the Bible recommend that every valley shall be exalted and every mountain made low? The crooked straight and the rough places plain," Trevelyan completed with a slight smile. "Yes. That is your nature, isn't it, sir? Whether people want it or not. But I'm coming to see that a grimmer style is sometimes required. God go with you." Thorne crossed with Trevelyan as he came in. "Bad news?" he asked, putting gloves, riding crop and hat on a small table. "As always, that depends. Any news?" "No useful responses. No unaccounted-for Italians." "Varzi the Clever. I should have expected nothing less. But it makes it interesting." He caught himself. "I'm done with games." "Alas, poor world. Haven't you often complained of my levity?" "Only out of jealousy. Don't change too much. If I can find the way out of this maze, I promise a jig every Tuesday and a revel on Saturday." "At least news of your town revel is out as planned," Thorne said. "I was asked about your pretty new bitch on the way here. It'll be in all the papers tomorrow, along with details about your card party. So if Varzi was in any doubt about your whereabouts, he won't be now." Robin pulled a face, but said, "There's something else." "What?" "Might be nothing," Thorne said, taking a somewhat battered letter out of his pocket. "Came up from Eyethorn yesterday, but wasn't drawn to my attention immediately because of its shabby appearance." Robin took the poor quality paper and read the blotchy inscription with a pattering heart. He turned to inspect the seal. Wax simply squished down. He snapped it and fumbled the paper open. "To my admired protector." "Oh, God." "I know you must be concerned." "Damn her," he muttered. "Which is poor reward for your kindness, but please know that I am well and with friends. I hope the same is true of you." "Friends? What friends? When was this written?" He looked back at the top. Friday. Where was it sent from? Robin turned to the sheet and studied the smudged writing of the postmaster. What does this say? Mickley? Micklebury. I've already sent an inquiry there post-haste, but she won't have lingered, of course. Can you share what it says? Robin read the rest aloud. I promise you on my honour that if I am in need or distress, I will send to you for help. If you're able, you idiot. So if you do not hear from me, you'll know all is well. Farewell, my friend. You will dance better through life without a pebble in your shoe. Robin threw down the note. Dance through life. I'm not dancing with a carved-up leg, am I? Or with concern for her, a millstone around my neck? Pebble in your shoe? Thorn asked. Petra, rock. Petronilla, little rock. We might find a trail to follow, but no. She wants to escape me. He picked up the letter as if a second reading would reveal new information. All it revealed was Petra. He could hear her saying those words in her lilting accent. She doesn't write an elegant hand, Thorn pointed out. Lowborn, after all. But Robin studied the letter. The writing was plain and perhaps even effortful. But then he saw how she'd begun by trying to write with complex loops on the rough paper. She'd written sparely by necessity. Whoever these friends are, they're impoverished, he said. I suppose it makes no sense to hurtle down there. And could play havoc with your leg. God rot my leg! But then Robin thought how literally that could be true. No, not that. Very well, I'll play the wise man and send someone on the errand. I must do something, however, Robin said, rising. I'm going to visit Mistress Cornalis. I'm sure she has fine quality writing paper. But it's somewhere I can go. It is also somewhere Signor Varzi might check if he knows of the connection between Teresa Cornalis and Petra's mother. And, he said in sudden excitement, why didn't I think of this? La Cornalis might know who her father is. Might she, by gad? But I'm coming too, armed. Varzi might be there, Robin said. That would be delightful. But she'd never permit attack on a titled guest in her house. Would he ask her permission? A point. I'll go armed and with armed men. I'll have to use my damned sedan chair anyway. If you'll oblige, I'd like you and some men to keep a watch outside. First to see if anyone else is watching, and then to see if Cornalis sends a message after I leave. Glad of some action. Do you take your fluffy guard dog? Coquette was frisking around Thorn as usual, trying to win him over. Tempting, but she'd probably bite the woman on principle and die of poisoning. Petra tried to look like a comfortable part of the cheerful Harsteads, but she noted two footmen in blue and gold livery and powdered hair watching everyone stream in. They might partly be for show, for everyone loved their gilded elegance, but Petra guessed they were local men able to spot who didn't belong. One passing couple riding a single horse called, "Ain't you grand, Jimmy?" and got a grin and a teasing reply. The other footman, who was closer to Petra, said, "Good day to you, Mr. Harsted." A mark of respect that made Mistress Harsted preen. Petra passed by unnoticed. "Isn't it lovely?" Mistress Harsted said, looking around. The estate was obviously designed by an expert hand to simulate countryside at its most perfect. Petra saw a lake in the distance upon which swans glided, and some sort of white temple. "There's deer normally," Mistress Harstead said, as her husband turned the cart into an area set aside for vehicles. "But for these big events, they put them somewhere. There's lovely gardens up near the house and peacocks. Such a noise as they make. Wouldn't want them outside my bedroom window." The cart stopped and everyone climbed out. The older boys unhitched the horses and led them into a roped-off paddock. Mistress Harstead and her older daughters cleaned and tidied everyone. Petra took off her hat, but that was the best she could do. When no one was looking, she stuffed it and her bundle under one of the seats. It contained nothing but Mistress Waddle's donated clothes, and though she'd liked to keep them for sentimental reasons, she'd look too out of place carrying it here. She was as ready as she'd ever be, but when she surveyed the park and the distant, majestic house, her courage leaked out through her worn-out shoes. The baby was put into her arms as the young mother ran to capture an escaping toddler. It was plump and drooling, but happy, and Petra had to smile at it. She instantly felt better, and wondered if the mother had truly needed help or had sensed her need. She made silly noises at the infant, who obligingly chuckled, showing the beginnings of one tooth. But then the party was ready. The mother reclaimed her baby, and Mr. Harstead pointed toward the house.
"You might as well ask, but if everyone's busy, I'm sure they'll let you wait."
It was a dismissal of sorts, so Petra said, "Thank you," and set off across grass scattered with people.
"Watch the ha-ha," he called after her.
She turned back.
"The what?"
"A deep ditch around the house. Keeps the deer out of the garden. There are bridges."
Petra thanked them again and watched as they went off along a wide path, the younger children running here and there and everywhere around the slower, older people. She'd met all kinds of people in her English journey, and all, old to young, had homes, families, and a place in the world. Unlike her. She joined a stream of people ambling toward the house, knowing she stood out by being solitary. But there was nothing she could do about that. She walked at the same pace as most, trying to look as if she belonged, eyes alert for a man who could be her father. Was she to approach him in public, though? Perhaps it would be better to go straight to the house and wait nearby until this event was over. She crossed a bridge over the grassy trench, and then more smooth lawn, to enter some formal gardens closer to the house. There she found more footmen. All looked pleasant and were chatting to visitors, but they were clearly stationed to prevent people from entering the house. Petra halted and looked around, wondering where she could wait without seeming suspicious. But then she spotted a dark-haired gentleman. An ignorant eye might think him one of the better sort of guest, and his manner was relaxed and amiable. But Petra knew he was an aristocrat. Her father? He was dark-haired and could be dark-eyed, but something didn't feel right. How peculiar. Had she really thought she'd feel some deep instinct of the blood? There were too many people for an encounter, so she moved on. But she'd already paused too long. A hand grabbed her arm.
"Who are you, then?"
demanded a heavy-jawed woman in an alarming hat.
"Never seen you afore."
The woman was bolstered in front and wide of hip, and had the manner of one who loved to command. Petra tugged.
"Let go of me," she said,
but a crowd was gathering.
"Let's have your name first."
"Maria Monmouth."
"Never heard of you. Anyone else heard of her?"
The murmur of denial sounded ugly. Where had all the good cheer gone? I have a right to be here, Petra protested, cursing her foreign accent.
Dress like that? The Inquisitor sneered. A vagrant, that's what you are, and up to no good, I'll be bound. What's more, she said, narrow-eyed, you're a foreigner. What if you're a spy, or out to kill his lordship?
She'd relaxed her grip, so Petra wrenched free and pushed her away.
You're mad. Leave me alone.
She was encircled, however, and the mood was nasty.
Doesn't she sound like a foreigner to you? The woman demanded of all, loving the furor she'd started. Looks foreign, too, a man said. Where are you from, then?
Wales, Petra said.
Ah, well, he said. That explains it, Mistress Digby. Even speak a foreign language in Wales, I hear tell. Then what's a Welshwoman doing here? The woman demanded. She's no right. This is for his lordship's people, this is.
What's going on here?
At the calm, authoritative voice, the circle melted into a formless cluster. It was the dark-haired man, seeming relaxed and at ease, but his eyes were taking in every detail. Not dark eyes, a kind of hazel.
This is a spy, my lord,
the woman exclaimed, swelling with importance.
No business here, unless it be wicked business.
Petra's arm was taken again, but more gently.
Thank you, Mistress Digby. I'll deal with her. Please, everyone, go along and enjoy yourselves.
The crowd dispersed, but part of it went with Mistress Digby, who was expounding on her suspicions and sagacity. His lordship drew Petra along a crushed stone path between low flower beds, and she had no choice but to go. He was a lord, but not her father, unless the portrait of the eye lied. He stopped in a new spot with no one close by.
Well?
He asked in a neutral way.
Your story, ma'am?
Petra studied him.
My Lord Hrothgar?
His brows rose a little.
No. You seek him?
Perhaps she wavered, for he touched her arm again just enough to offer support. At the end of her resources, Petra simply said,
Yes.
Why?
It's a personal matter.
He looked her over.
With child? You're not foisted on him.
I would never...
His raised hand stopped her. After a moment, he shrugged.
Come along, then. This could be amusing.
At the echo of Robin, Petra was tempted to flee, but she'd come this far and would see it through. She went with him, asking,
May I know your name, my lord?
Lord Arkenbright Malloran, Lord Hrothgar's brother. One of them.
Such a simple explanation, but what a strange name. Lord Arkenbright asked a servant for the Marquis, and was told he'd recently been demonstrating the workings of a fountain. Was the Marquis eccentric? Hadn't she heard that he might be mad? When they arrived at the fountain, it was playing merrily without assistance, and someone said his lordship had gone to the topiary garden. Her escort strolled along the trail of his busy brother, stopping frequently to talk to people. Petra did her best to ignore the strange looks sent her way, but she wished to heaven they'd reach the Marquis and have done with this. Then a petite lady joined them.
What's happening? She asked, with a bright-eyed look at Petra.
She wore a hat as wide as Mistress Waddle's, but a great deal more stylish.
I'm taking a conundrum to the master of them. Any idea where he is?
I think I saw him going to the pineapple house.
Lord Arkenbright switched directions. The lady fell in beside Petra.
I'm Lady Bright.
Lady Bright? Petra queried, dazed.
No one can be bothered with Arkenbright, an ancient English prince. They often had unpronounceable names. So he's Lord Bright, and as I'm his wife, I'm Lady Bright. May I know your name?
I don't know.
It escaped because of weariness and confusion, but it wasn't surprising that both her hosts looked sceptical. I'm not mad, truly. Perhaps we should find Diana, Lady Bright said. Rothgar she wants, so Rothgar she gets. Perhaps you should check her for a knife, then.
She'd probably cry rape. You could feel her all over.
I'm not dangerous, Petra protested.
Lord Bright turned to her and said something rapidly in French. After a heartbeat's thought, Petra pretended not to understand. He smiled slightly but coldly, not fooled at all. A conundrum within a maze. Bay should be delighted, and I am armed. Not entirely careless, then, on this public occasion. A long glass house came into view. The wooden parts were made in a lacy design that was quite beautiful, and the glass panes shone like diamonds in the sunlight. But Petra's attention was fixed on it as the place where perhaps she might finally have the encounter she'd come so far to make. She studied all the males near the hothouse, but saw none that were likely. Lord Bright said, "Bay, an unexpected guest."